Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Free American Hour with a tremendous echo on this end that shouldn't be there. But we are just broadcasting exclusively on Liberty Broadcasting Network. So this this feedback is Liberty Broadcasting Network because we don't have any other shows on, any other websites up. We're just trying to keep this pure. Now, that song, Rainbow Bird, I wrote as theme song, kind of a theme song for a movie about the last passing of Planet X. And I want to bring my guest up, John DiNardo, who is kind of my resident expert on Planet X. Hello, John. How are you?
Hello, Clay. I'm glad to be with you and your audience.
Well, nice to have you, sir. We're trying to, something a little different here. We're just doing, I'm just doing one network so we can get good sound and get everything recorded, and it'll be all up on Liberty Broadcasting Network. But, John, how long have you been studying Planet X? How did you first hear about Planet X, and how did you start studying it?
I first heard about Planet X from a anti-New World Order broadcaster named Clay Douglas.
Son of a gun!
In 2002.
I heard him.
That's the first time I ever heard the term Planet X. And you're the only anti-New World Order broadcaster who's ever had the courage to talk about it. Planet X.
Well, I think...
Nobody else will touch it.
I think Zachariah Sitchin is right. I think it comes around. I think the pyramids were built by superior technology to last through their passing. They didn't know how it was going to go. I think it's quite possible that the last time it came by, we might have been, or one of the first times it came by, we might have all been just one continent called Atlantis, and everything else disappeared when it came close. But
yeah, I mean, there is evidence that Atlantis was a highly developed civilization. They had high technology comparable to ours. And many researchers believe that Atlantis was destroyed around 9,000 BC. And if you do the arithmetic, you'll see that 9,000 BC is 3 times 36 and a half centuries. So if it takes 36 and a half centuries for Planet X to make one complete orbit out of our solar system and back in again, then it had comes in every 36 and a half centuries, makes one complete cycle, and we can gauge or index the destructions, past ancient historical destructions of Earth, by that time span of 36 and a half centuries. So the arithmetic works. 9,000 BC is three times 36 and a half centuries. 2 times 36 and a half centuries would take you back to 5300 BC, which is when geologists Pittman and Ryan say that the Great Flood of Noah's Day occurred. They examined the remains of the dead of the Black Sea, and they found from studying the Black Sea that 5300 or around that time was the time of the Great Flood. So we're seeing scientific evidence that pretty much indexes these passages of Planet X.
Now, is it possible that the Atlantean civilization after the supercontinent broke up 9,000, maybe let's say 9,000 years ago?
Would be 11,000
years. 11,000 years ago. And then the last passing of Planet X would have been the Flood of Noah, and that would have been 3,000?
Well, the third passing of Planet X was around, getting an echo here, but it was around 9,000 BC. Then the one before that, the one after that, was the Flood of Noah's Day, 5300 BC. And then the passage following that, that is the most recent passage, was 1650 BC, which was the Israelites' exodus from Egypt, the great 10 plagues of Egypt, which are described in the book of Exodus. So the last passage was the exodus from Egypt. 2 passages ago was the Great Flood, and 3 passages ago was the destruction of Atlantis.
Okay, that makes sense. And
we have geological evidence of the last passage, 1650 BC. The geologists tell us that around 1650 BC, the great Santorini volcanic caldera exploded. And they say from the geological evidence that this might have been the greatest recorded, greatest known detected explosion of any volcano in history. So there's solid evidence right there. And incidentally, that lines up right with Exodus chapter 9 of the Bible, where God tells Moses and Aaron to scoop up ashes from the furnace and throw the ashes up in the air in the face of Pharaoh and his magicians in Exodus chapter 9. And at that time, God ordained that a great cloud of ash would cover the entire land of Egypt, as recorded in Exodus 9. So this is my voice is coming back on me. This is biblical confirmation of what the geologists had actually determined about the Santorini explosion, which emitted all of that dust cloud and hot ashes that came down and covered and burnt the people of Egypt. So
What about Pompeii? Where whole cities were destroyed? Was there a lot of volcanic activity going on? And the same thing is happening right now, isn't it?
Yes, volcanic activity is definitely increasing. We see Kilauea now becoming very active. It's being reported on the Weather Channel and the mass media. We had that huge Icelandic volcano back in 2009, which was very devastating, and it's probably going to erupt again. Yes, volcanic activity is definitely increasing. Even undersea volcanic activity is increasing. The ocean floor temperatures are increasing. So we're seeing greater and greater eruptions. In fact, getting off to the issue, which is really relevant, the issue of the Gulf of Mexico oil spill. That oil spill, I'm convinced, is a natural disaster in the making, in progress. And I was told 4 years ago by my friend Mark, who has a friend who is a geologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, 4 years ago, long before anybody ever heard of the Gulf of Mexico oil spill. This U.S. geologist told Mark that they expect land masses to arise out of the Gulf of Mexico. That was a scary statement, something that no one would ever forget. And when I saw the oil spill, when the oil spill occurred back in April of 2010, last year, I immediately connected that with, there goes my voice coming back on me again, connected that with what's with this oil spill, and I realized that what happened was British Petroleum and the government knows through their satellite soundings and sightings of the undersea basin and beneath the seabed, they know that eruptions are beginning to occur, and they do not want the public to know that massive natural disasters are becoming rampant worldwide, because if people know that natural disasters are becoming rampant, then people will no longer be afraid and subjugated and subordinate to the government. And this is what the power elite really fear, the worldwide power elite. They rather blame themselves for this Gulf of Mexico disaster than see the real truth come out. And then that is God and the forces of heaven that are creating this. And then they would lose their power.
Now, if they have known that we've gone through this three times, if they know it's coming back, that would explain why they built these dumb bases, these deep underground military bases.
That's right. In fact, I've got a book here by Marshall Masters, and he goes into great detail talking about the 129 deep underground military bases. And he talks about Phil Schneider, a brilliant geologist and inventor who worked down there doing the excavation work. And Phil Schneider was murdered because he was exposing all of this that was going on.
Yeah, committed suicide with a piano wire, wasn't it?
Yeah, some way or other. I don't know exactly what the cause of death was, but he had, according to this book, and I'm trying to find the page, they attempted to kill him many times, and 9 or 10 times, and they finally got him. Phil Schneider was a great, great, courageous man. And
And he talked about the aliens being in this Dulce base. How do these aliens fit into this whole scenario?
I really would not like to get into that, but because when we get into that, then people start to lose their credence in this whole issue. We can talk about it later on.
We have the same problem with the talk show host.
Yeah, right.
When they start talking about the little green guys, you know, everybody kind of goes, uh-oh.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Phil Schneider, but we can look at the actual evidence he brought up, and he talked about, I'm trying to find a page here, but I do recall that he said there's 129 deep underground bases. Without going into all the details, these bases are huge. I mean, like four to ten cubic miles. That means, a couple miles by a couple miles wide and a couple miles deep. It's incredible. And they cost into trillions of dollars. All the nations of the world have constructed these on deep underground bases. And it's quite obvious. The sea vault in Norway, everyone knows about that. They can't hide it anymore. In fact, Governor Jesse Ventura went down on television. He went into these deep underground bases. His producer, Michael Braverman, went into Cheyenne Mountain, the bowels of Cheyenne Mountain, and spoke to Colonel Wynn, who is chief of security down there. They have a whole military force, highly armed and highly trained. And Michael Braverman said to Colonel Wynn, when the earth starts to scorch and people are coming down here trying to escape into the underground bases, will you allow them to come in? And Colonel Wynn replied, when those 3-ton steel doors are closed, you can knock all day. Nobody's getting in. And we are here to defend this base. We'll do whatever it takes to defend this facility. So there you go. They took our money. They used it to build their own rescue or their own place.
All right, hang on a minute. We're getting a tremendous feedback and static. Maybe it's time for a commercial. Maybe that's what's happening here.
I hope so. I hope that's all that it is.
Yeah, well, I don't know. My computer's crashed 3 times in the last hour, and it's, there we go. No, it's not my end, sir. John and I have been talking all day. We haven't heard that sound before. There's nothing on my end.
Right. It sounds okay to me now, though. I don't know how it sounds.
Now it sounds fine.
Okay. Now, I have I went to my county library, and I actually photocopied the actual New York Times article, January 30th, 1983. This article is the federal government of the United States proclaiming that Planet X actually exists and that they are launching this infrared astronomical satellite into polar orbit around the South Pole in order to actually detect it and photograph this Planet X. So there you have government admitting it.
John DiNardo talking about Planet X. All right, we're back, and I'm talking to John DiNardo about Planet X coming around. There was just a sighting in China of 2 suns. Now, of course, everybody's going to say, well, it's just a reflection. It was just the sun reflecting into the camera and all that, but they talked about it on Chinese news. Was that an accidental sighting?
I don't think so, although I can't really say I haven't investigated or studied it. We know that the astronomers who work for the U.S. government certainly know what it was, but I can tell you what it probably was. It was probably a comet associated with Planet X. You see, Planet X is like a huge beehive in space, and as it travels through space because of its tremendous mass, it gravitationally attracts all sizes of space bodies, and it's like a vacuum cleaner in space. So when it comes into the solar system, it is like a beehive with a swarm of bees all around it. And this swarm, the field of this swarm of celestial bodies, comets, small planets, asteroids, meteors, rocks, boulders, everything, this swarm, the field could be many, many millions of miles in diameter. That's how huge and how massive the gravitational field of this Planet X really is.
John, there...
Well, as it comes in, the outlying bees in this bee swarm, some of them will get caught into the sun and get sucked into the sun like a magnet.
All right, CJ is asking you to speak up a little bit. I guess he's having a few problems with his equipment there.
Okay.
I can hear you pretty well, but if you could do a little bit more volume, I'd appreciate it. And
okay.
I'll try to do the same thing so we can get his equipment to handle everything properly.
Okay. Some of the comets in the outlying bee swarm are the swarm of celestial bodies surrounding Planet X, which are gravitationally gripped, captured by Planet X. Some of these outlying comets and other celestial bodies will get sucked in by the sun like a magnet. The sun's mass is 1/3 of a million Earth masses. Therefore, we know that gravitational force of attraction is directly proportional to the mass of a body. So the sun, having such an incredibly great mass, 1/3 of a million Earth masses, would very easily suck in some of these outlying comets from Planet X's swarm. And we see Planet X getting closer. We know that it's really a no-brainer when you look at basic physics. Two masses will always be attracted to one another, pulled toward one another by gravity, by the mutual force of gravity. We know that when we hold a rock out in our arm, at arm's length, and release that rock, it must fall to the ground because the small mass of the rock is being gravitationally attracted to the large mass of the Earth. Likewise, this smaller mass of Planet X, we call it small, it's actually conservatively estimated to be about at least 1,000 Earth masses. So this small 1,000 Earth masses body called Planet X is being gravitationally attracted by the 1/3 of a million Earth masses body, our sun. So it's a no-brainer. It's going to get sucked in by the sun. There's nothing you can do to stop it.
CJ, you got the static is coming back up again. Whatever you did to your volume, it started the static again. John, it was absolutely clear until just a couple of seconds ago, a couple of minutes ago.
Then it has to come into the solar system in order to cause damage to Earth. Now, actually, part of your answer can be gotten from this New York Times article. We could see what it did. This Planet X was hanging out, coming in out beyond the outer bounds of our solar system back in 1983 when this New York Times article was published, when NASA released this announcement through the New York Times back in 1983. And even then, despite the fact that it was well beyond our solar system, way far out, it was so large that it was exerting a gravitational pull on the outer planets. And let me just read the beginning of this article. New York Times, Sunday, January 30th.
What's the date again?
New York Times, Sunday, January 30th, 1983. This was article heralded the infrared astronomical satellite launching, which was specifically dedicated to finding Planet X. That's how important this Planet X was to the government, and that's how candid the government was about it at the time before the National Security Agency came in and muzzled the scientists at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. This article, in fact, even has a picture right in the article itself of the infrared astronomical satellite. The caption is U.S. and Dutch technicians preparing the infrared astronomical satellite before its launch last week, January 1983. I'll read the article.
Okay.
The title is Clues.
Just a second. CJ, the static's starting again. The little water sound is starting again. You hear that too, John?
Yes, I do. It sounds like a faint noise.
Okay. It's good enough I can hear you, so, this time.
Pardon? title is Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X, January 30th, New York Times, by John Noble Wilford. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing, I call it pulling, at the two giant planets, causing irregularities. Incidentally, I call that blips, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought Planet X. Evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. They are devoting more time to visual observations with the 200-inch telescope at Mount Palomar in California. They are tracking two Pioneer spacecraft now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto to see if variations in their trajectories provide clues to the source of this mysterious force, this gravitational force. And they are hoping that a satellite-borne telescope launched last week will detect heat signatures from the planet or whatever it is out there. The infrared astronomical satellite was boosted into a 560-mile high polar orbit Tuesday night from Vandenberg Air Force Base, California. It represents an $80 million venture by the United States, Britain, and the Netherlands. In the next 6 or 7 months, the telescope is expected to conduct a wide-ranging survey of nearly all the sky, detecting sources not of ordinary light, but of infrared radiation, which is invisible to the human eye and largely absorbed by the atmosphere. Scientists thus hope that the new telescope will chart thousands of infrared-emitting objects, etc. The last time a serious search of the skies was made, it led to discovery in 1930 of Pluto, the ninth planet. But the story begins more than a century before that, after the discovery of Uranus in 1781 by the English astronomer and musician William Herschel. Until then, the planetary system seemed to end with Saturn. As astronomers observed Uranus, noting irregularities in its orbital path, many speculated that they were witnessing the gravitational pull of an unknown planet. So began the first planetary search based on astronomers' predictions, which ended in the 1840s with the discovery of Neptune, almost simultaneously by English, French, and German astronomers. But Neptune was not massive enough to account entirely for the orbital behavior of Uranus.
Hold on just a second, John. I'm tired of the static here. There's something wrong with our connection with CJ, CJ here. I'm going to end the call. I'll call you right back.
Okay. Bye-bye. Hello.
Yes. Hold on now. Let's see if we can get rid of that static. I don't know where it's coming from. He says it's not on their end, and it's definitely not on my end, and I don't think it's on your end either, because I can hear you just fine when we've talked off the air.
Okay. Continuing, but Neptune was not massive enough to account entirely for the orbital behavior of Uranus. Indeed, Neptune itself seemed to be affected by a still more remote planet. In the late 19th century, two American astronomers, William H. Pickering and Percival Lowell, predicted the size and approximate location of the trans-Neptunian body, which Lowell called Planet X. That was like around the year 1900, over 100 years ago, they named it Planet X. So this thing is for real, and it's been for real, known for real by astronomers for over a century. Continuing with this New York Times January 30th article. Years later, Pluto was detected by Clyde Tombaugh, working at Lowell Observatory in Arizona. Several astronomers, however, suspected it might not be the Planet X of prediction. Subsequent observations proved them right. Pluto was too small to change the orbits of Uranus and Neptune. The combined mass of Pluto and its recently discovered satellite Charon is only one-fifth that of Earth's moon. Now, here's the best part of the article, I think. This is where you get a lot of information from NASA. Recent calculations by the United States Naval Observatory have confirmed the orbital perturbation exhibited by Uranus and Neptune, which Dr. Thomas C. Van Flander, an astronomer at the observatory, says could be explained by a single undiscovered planet. He and a colleague, Dr. Robert Harrington, whom we now believe was murdered. That's my comment. Dr. Robert Harrington calculated that the 10th planet should be 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth and have a highly elliptical orbit that takes it some 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto, hardly next door, but still within the gravitational influence of the Sun. Incidentally, he says it's 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth. That's a gross undercalculation. I can't understand why a great astronomer like Dr. Robert F. Harrington would have said that it's only 2 to 5 times the size of Earth, 2 to 5 times the mass of Earth, because I can only speculate that Dr. Harrington was trying not to be muzzled because he knew there was a lot of pressure for NASA to be quiet and not even talk about this because it might panic the public, because astronomers knew deep down, and this is stated in another article that I have here, that they believe that it's actually incoming. Astronomers believe it's coming into our solar system again due to the inexorable force of gravity, which I just explained before, between two bodies, planet X and our much, much greater sun. So they didn't want to panic people. And Dr. Harrington probably figured, well, let me underplay this thing and say it's much smaller so that they won't muzzle me. And I that's my speculation on why he underestimated it. But I can tell you evidence from Dr. John Murray of the Open College of England in the late 1990s, and simultaneously and independently with Dr. John Matisse of the University of Louisiana in the late 1990s.
Hold on a minute, the commercials are coming in full strength.
It's a crime to even own one if you live in Germany, though it's not an...
All right, we're back. We're talking with John DiNardo. Let me ask you something, John. If I recall reading Sitchin, and it's been quite a few years, he's dead now. Did he believe that the ancient Sumerians around Gilgamesh's era thought that planet X was inhabited?
I believe so. I have only skimmed through the book, so I can't be sure, but from what everything I've heard, yes, he did believe that planet X was inhabited and these superior beings came to Earth, from what I understand. I hope, you know, I can't get really give you definitive information on Sitchin's interpretation, but I believe that's what it was. They came to Earth and they exploited, or I don't know whether they actually, he says they created mankind. I don't know, but I really didn't have much interest in the details of his theories, but simply in his explanation of the existence of Planet X. And actually, in the book, I can tell you what I did read about the disasters. He tells us about what the ancients recorded, and they passed it on down to us, those few people who survived. And he quotes Zechariah Sitchin in his book, The Twelfth Planet, around page 240, quotes R. Campbell Thompson, a man who wrote a book titled The Records of the Magicians and Astronomers of Babylon and Nineveh. And Campbell Thompson, in his book, states that this planet is, let's see now, let me see if I can find a book and quote it and read it for you. Hold on a second, I got to wait.
Okay. All right.
It's much more colorful when you hear it right out of the book. And I seem to remember it was around page 240.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, okay.
They're starting again.
Okay, now, on page 240, he says, he's quoting from the ancient Babylonians. In the book, it says, no less explicitly, the Psalms outline, okay, that's, he's quoting from the Bible here, but I'm going to go further on. Recognized as a great traveler in the heavens, this is talking about Nibiru, which is the Sumerians' name for Planet X. Nibiru simply means planet of the crossing, because it crosses our path. Recognized as a great traveler in the heavens, Nibiru, soaring to immense heights at its apogee and then coming down, bowing unto the heaven at its perigee, the planet was depicted as a winged globe. Isn't that amazing? A winged globe. And the reason for that, I'm going to give my own commentary, is it's engulfed in plasma. It's saturated with this electrically charged gas known as plasma. And the plasma is actually, it when Planet X intrudes into the outer, into the gateway to our solar system, which is the heliosphere, this plasma sphere that engulfs the entire solar system. When it penetrates, it comes in like a bee flying into a large bubblegum bubble. And a bee coming into the bubblegum bubble would pick up all this bubblegum and would pull a whole trail of bubblegum behind it. Likewise, Planet X and its gang of, its swarm of celestial bodies penetrate the heliosphere, and all this plasma sticks to them, just like static electricity sticks to your hands and your body when you go to open up a package filled with these styrofoam peanuts packing. You can't get them off of you. They stick to you like glue. Well, that's electrostatic forces. Well, the same plasma sticks to Planet X. Now it's engulfed in plasma, and it glows. So as it comes in, the solar winds blowing out from the sun, generated and hurled out by the sun, hit this comet, and all the plasma on the comet begins to swirl sideways like two arms or two wings of an eagle. And that's what they saw. They called it the wing globe. And wouldn't you know that all the great civilizations of the world saw this, and those who recorded it recorded pretty much the same image of this bird, this winged globe. It looks like an eagle. And if you look at the U.S. Air Force insignia, that's Planet X, the winged globe. It's an ancient symbol. Also, the Chrysler automobile insignia is the winged globe. I'll go on to read Sitchin's article here, page 240 in the book, The 12th Planet. Wherever archaeologists uncovered the remains of Near Eastern peoples, the symbol of the winged globe was conspicuous, dominating temples and palaces, carved on rocks, etched on cylinder seals, painted on walls. It accompanied kings and priests, stood above their thrones, hovered above them in battle scenes, was etched into their chariots. Clay, metal, stone, and wood objects were adorned with this symbol. The rulers of Sumer and Akkad, Babylon and Assyria, etc., etc., all revered the symbol. Hittite kings, Egyptian pharaohs, Persian tsars, all proclaimed the symbol and what it stood for. Supreme. It remained so for millennia. Central to the religious beliefs and astronomy of the ancient world was the conviction that the 12th planet, the planet of the gods, remained within the solar system and that its grand orbit returned it periodically to Earth's vicinity. The pictographic sign for the 12th planet of the planet of the crossing was a cross. Sound familiar? This cuneiform sign, the cross, was also divine, was meant as Anu, and divine evolved into Semitic, the Hebraic languages, to the letter Tau, Tav. And it shows a picture of the cross, like the cross of the, and the Lord Jesus Christ claims that he will come, and that you will see the sign of the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. That's the sign of the cross. So he claims, essentially, and I understand that he claims that he will be Planet X.
John, hold on just a second for me. You hear the static here, don't you?
Yes, it's getting there. I mean, not as bad as it was before.
Okay, now it's fading. Now it's fading down. Now it's gone. I hadn't touched nothing. I was just thinking about hanging up on the network to see if you can still hear. But they think it's my mic. But you can hear me fine. And we talked before, and you can hear me fine. You can hear me fine now, can't you?
Sure.
So there's no static on the line now.
No, it's fine. Well, let's continue now if we can. And you know what they're saying in the book here, I'll paraphrase it real quick for the sake of brevity. What this book also tells, the ancients said that this planet Nibiru, comes up through into our solar system around the orbital path of Jupiter, between Jupiter and the asteroid belt. Now, that would be inward from Jupiter. I mean, as we're looking out into space at Jupiter, which is farther out from us, we would see this Planet X coming up like a porpoise. Imagine that you're on this lake, this placid, huge, circular lake, very calm, and it's in the middle of night, and the only light you have is a huge light, mounted on a platform at the center of this large circular lake. And you have boats, people on a boat, you know, various boats at various distances from this central light. And the boats are slowly rowing around the light. Well, that sort of is an analogy of our solar system. We might be in a boat like a few boats away from, you know, from the sun, but Jupiter would be a couple more planets out. Beyond us is Mars. Beyond Mars is the asteroid belt. And then beyond the asteroid belt is Jupiter. Now, the ancients say that this planet comes up between the asteroid belt, between the orbital path of the asteroid belt and the orbital path of Jupiter. And so we can expect it to come up in the same place every time, every 36 and a half centuries. And the reason is, it is so massive that it's hard to budge that guy. I mean, you might budge, like somebody on a skateboard as they're coming down a street. But if you have a big garbage truck and it's on a certain path, you're not going to budge that thing. That's why I believe Planet X always comes in through the same point. Now, where do we see, what did the ancients tell us? They said they saw a lot of fireworks on Jupiter. Lots of electrical discharges, that is. See, this plasma body will discharge with Jupiter. In fact, in 2009, we have an amateur astronomer, Anthony Wesley, who photographed comet collisions into the southern hemisphere of Jupiter, that massive gas giant. And the comet collisions, I speculate, were caused by coming to Planet X's outlying swarm of celestial bodies crashing into Jupiter. Remember, gravity works. Jupiter is 318 Earth masses. So when one of those outlying celestial bodies, one of them in deep, deep center field, so to speak, surrounding Planet X, gets close to the southern pole, the south pole of Jupiter, Jupiter's going to suck it right in like a magnet, like a powerful magnet. And that's what these comet collisions were. Typically, comet collisions are extremely rare into Jupiter, and yet we've seen several of them over the last couple of years. More evidence that these outlying bodies are getting sucked in. More evidence that Planet X is coming in, near Jupiter, into the ecliptic plane. Now, getting back to this lake that I was talking about, that's what our solar system looks like, the surface of a placid lake. And all of a sudden, you're looking out at this boat, rowboat, further away from you, further out from the center than you are. And we'll say that rowboat represents Jupiter. And all of a sudden, you see this porpoise come from deep, deep down below the lake, shooting straight up. You know, you've seen these porpoises, the way they shoot upward out of the water. Well, that's the way Planet X is going to be coming up, because it's coming from deep down below our ecliptic plane, that surface. That rotating, invisible, imaginary disk in space on which all the planets revolve around the sun.
Now, if it's this close, if it's within the next year that it's supposed to come by, they would have to be able to see it with telescopes. Now, they've got a telescope. The Vatican has a telescope in Antarctica, doesn't it? Don't they?
The Vatican has a telescope in Arizona. It's Mount Graham in Arizona. In fact, Malachy Martin, the famous scholar and priest who was a confidant and an aide to several popes, Malachy Martin was probably murdered because he was talking about Planet X on the Art Bell show back in the 1990s. Art Bell, we have the audio. We can find it. I have it also, and we can play it if I had it keyed up. But Art Bell says to Malachy Martin, why did the Vatican muscle their way, and I really mean muscle their way, into Mount Graham and built this observatory on Mount Graham in Arizona? And Malachy Martin says, remember, this man was high up with the popes. And he said, because the hierarchy of the Catholic Church knows that something is coming in over the next 5 to 10 years. And shortly after that, Malachy Martin died. And I think it was a violent death. It's covered up pretty well, just like so many other deaths are covered up. Well, anyway, there's more evidence. Graham? Yeah. They're still up there. They're watching it. But in the South Pole, the government, the U.S. government established the South Pole's telescope back in 2007. This is the harshest environment that anyone could actually go to. And there's no reason why they would set up a telescope in such a harsh, difficult environment. But they did it because they needed to go to the southern hemisphere, the very foot, the soles of the feet of Fat Man Earth, in order to see this planet coming in down below the surface of this ecliptic plane, the sort of the surface of the lake that I was describing. They had to see this porpoise coming up from down below. So they needed to go to the South Pole and build that telescope.
It's coming down, it's coming down. New world orders, training armies on our ground. With soldiers dressed in black and blue, to aim the crosshairs.